Hello and welcome to another episode of Rational Actors on Blogging Heads. I'm Kevin Glass with Town Hall, and today I'm joined by...
Gabriel Arana from The American Prospect.
Yeah, thanks for being with me, Gabe. You wrote an article and on the relationship between the Conservative Political Action Conference, CPAC, for the remainder of this Blogging Heads, their relationship with GoProud and other... pro-gay marriage organizations in the conservative movement. So I kind of wanted you to get your take on how CPAC's relationship with gay marriage advocates has or hasn't changed over the last few years and what that means for the conservative movement.
Well, I think that it's a barometer for how conservatives are dealing with the gay marriage question. Although it has... So the backstory is that GoProud, which is a new, which was founded in 2009, it's a Tea Party Republican group, was allowed to sponsor CPAC in 2010 and 2011. And then there was a change in leadership at the American Conservative Union, which hosts CPAC. And they called for a board vote to see if GoProud would be allowed to be a sponsor that year and voted the proposal down, so they weren't allowed. And since then, the organization has been barred from being a sponsor. And in the intervening time, so that was 2011, 2012, 2013, between those years, there was a change of leadership at GoProud. So now under... Under new leadership from, I forget their names.
Matt Beckstein is one of them.
Yes. So Matt Beckstein and Ross, let's see what's his last name. So under new leadership from GoProud, GoProud asked to attend CPAC and we're allowed to do so this year. And the way it played out in the media is that it was seen as an embrace of the organization. And the criticism from a lot of those of us on the left was that basically anyone can attend CPAC, that this was this signaled no change in attitude or policy from the American Conservative Union toward GoProud or any of the other gay conservative organizations. So I hope that little history wasn't too convoluted.
Now, a couple different things. Well, first off, I should say this in the interest of integrity. Town Hall is a fairly major sponsor of CPAC, so that might color anyone's perception of what I have to say. I have a lot of good and bad things to say about the way that CPAC is run. I think that's a pretty good history of what we're dealing with here. There's a lot of kind of messy interpersonal politics, insider baseball type stuff going on between the organization of the American Conservative Union and GoProud. And you're right that there's new leadership in town. And it was kind of a weird publicity push on the part of both ACU and GoProud leading up to CPAC this year, in that you're right, they both kind of discussed how members of GoProud would be quote unquote welcomed at CPAC. But that was always the case. You know, if you're just an ordinary person, not a member of the media, not a sponsor, not an exhibitor, etc., and you purchase a ticket to CPAC, there's no line that says, are you gay? Or are you in favor of same-sex marriage? So it was kind of never the case that anyone was barred from purchasing a ticket and going to CPAC.
I tried to see if, having read about it in the media, I tried to see if attending as GoProud, which I didn't really know what that meant. So I tried to figure out if it meant something special, in the context of CPAC. And it didn't seem to mean anything other than they can show up and attend the various panels and discussions. So it didn't seem to signal any sort of change.
Right. It doesn't signal a change, I don't think. But what I think we're dealing with is a lot of, like I said, there was some messy interpersonal stuff, inside baseball stuff, with the previous Go Proud leadership. And they're gone, and the new leadership is in, and it seems like they're trying to ease, to have a kind of easy transition maybe into a place where Go Proud is allowed kind of to be a sponsor of CPAC in the future. And that, you know, that might be completely wrong. But it seems like the new leadership and the ACU's leadership were trying to put out this united front to say, you know, the rifts between us in the past are in the past, and we are kind of trying to make a truce here. And the previous leadership of GoProud actually condemned this. They said, you know, this is all a sham. GoProud are still, you know, probably what you would, how you titled your piece, second class gays at CPAC. And that they're no different from anyone else who attends and pays a ticket, but they're still barred from, you know, being a sponsor. They're barred basically from giving CPAC a bunch of money to be there with a booth. But it seems like there might be, and this is just from being there and knowing the types of people who are there, and knowing that a lot of the, you might call them elitists or thought leaders or whatever in the conservative movement, are shifting their attitudes on gay marriage. And so it seems like the ACU and CPAC might be trying to ease out of an explicitly anti-gay marriage stance into kind of a more neutral stance where they say, some people are for it, some people are against it. We're not really taking a position here. And then possibly in the future, you know, you might see an actually pro-gay marriage, or at least pro-gay marriage acceptance conservative movement.
Yeah, so I think it's hard to tell until Go Proud or any of the other gay Republican organization asks the American Conservative Union if they can sponsor. That'll be the real litmus test, because since the ACU, CPAC took a vote excluding Go Proud, there hasn't been another vote.
Right.
So there's been no. That one of the gay Republican groups would have to ask, and then either be told that they could sponsor or not, and then that, you know, that would tell us whether there's a real change in policy among the ACU. And just to go into it a little further, the way that the current leadership at Go Proud is framing their relationship with the ACU. So the previous leader of Go Proud is somebody named Jimmy LaSalvia. He's a really strong personality. When Go Proud was barred from sponsoring, I mean, it would be an understatement to say that he was, you know, you know, that he spoke out about it. He was very vocal. And one of the leaders of Go Proud in an interview with Metro Weekly said that Cleta Mitchell, she's on the board of the American Conservative Union, and is supposedly, haven't spoken to her, she sort of doesn't like to talk to liberal journalists, probably understandably, but she was the one, by various people's accounts, who tried to get Go Proud barred from CPAC. One of the leaders of Go Proud called her a nasty bigot, and so there was a lot of ill will between the ACU and Go Proud. And so I think that with the new leadership is trying to have a much more constructive relationship with the ACU, presumably in the hope that eventually the organization will allow them to attend as sponsors or to have a booth.
Right. Now, what I saw at the at CPAC, and this is just my very subjective opinion here, is a conservative movement that is moving towards acceptance of gay marriage, if not, you know, approval or advocacy for. And there was a piece by Leah Labresco at the American Conservative and a piece by Elahi Izadi at National Journal kind of detailing the ways in which gay marriage was not an issue up for discussion at CPAC. And, you know, there were no explicitly, you know, protecting the family panels. There were a couple speakers here and there who said, you know, we conservatives believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. But there were, you know, very few of them, and there were no themed speeches about that. And I wanted to get your take on this. Related to, and I think that, you know, he's not necessarily representative of the grassroots conservative movement, but Ross Douthat had a great article, I think last week, basically saying that there is no gay marriage fight anymore, and that social conservatives, what they're doing, well, anti-gay marriage social conservatives are basically negotiating a surrender, you know, and that the prediction that, you know, it would take until the mid-2020s or 2030 to see gay marriage legal in all 50 states is looking pessimistic at this point. And we saw, you know, a fairly large rash of court cases in red states recently legalizing, well, they're still making their way through the court system, but initial rulings that would legalize gay marriage. And some of those have, in the past, have stood kind of in a surprising fashion, and that might continue to be the case. So I wanted to kind of see where, what your, I don't know, outsider's perspective is on my conception of a changing conservative movement.
So I would think that you're right, at least among the party elites, the leaders of the movement, you know, the elites, the intellectuals. I think there's people like Ross Douthat. I think there's a realization that conservatives have lost the gay marriage wars. And as you mentioned, his article said that basically now we have to negotiate the terms of our surrender. So the silence at I found the silence at CPAC sort of strange. Strange and not strange. So I know that when I first came out to my parents, one way that they dealt with it was just by not talking about it. And, you know, on the surface, that can mask as acceptance. But I also think that, I think when you haven't had, as, you know, probably the participants at CPAC, many of them, not all of them, you know, have not spoken about gay marriage at length, have not sort of come to terms with it. I think the silence is indicative of discomfort. So I'm actually curious what you think. I mean, is that sort of the, you know, the silence before, you know, before the acceptance?
Right.
Because at previous CPACs, there have been panel discussions on same-sex marriage and what the party should do with respect to gay rights, and there was no talk of that, which,
right.
I don't think it would signal total acceptance. It might signal defeat, but I thought it was an odd omission. So maybe you can explain it.
Well, I think there's a couple things going on there. One of which is that, there's a very strong young, explicitly libertarian faction of attendees at CPAC. And they've been there for a long time. They're the Ron Paul folks who have basically seamlessly transitioned their enthusiasm for Ron to his son Rand. And they are very vocal, and they cause a ruckus in the ballroom when anything they disagree with happens. But more generally, 65% of CPAC attendees are under 25. And even among self-identified Republicans and self-identified conservatives, gay marriage support is very strong in that demographic. So it is kind of, it's this, and CPAC is a really weird mix of people. There are the kind of CPAC lifers who are older, more moneyed. They have the means and the time to travel to CPAC and attend as paying customers. And then there's the young demographic, a lot of whom are, you know, college Republican chapters who bust themselves in with their college Republicans' budgets. And it's kind of this uneasy because between those two factions, there's nobody wants to talk about it. And I would liken it to being at Thanksgiving and your elderly relative says something homophobic. You're generally, you don't argue with that person and try to change their mind. You just let it slide and know that that viewpoint is going to be irrelevant in the future, right? Mm-hmm. And they're also, they're your family member and you love them and you don't want to say something insulting, even if, you know, you think that they are dead wrong. And possibly offensive. So I think that, those two dynamics are what are at play at CPAC. And, you know, in the future, the support for gay marriage among mainstream conservatives is going to grow. It's going to reach a plurality and then a majority, and it's simply not going to be an issue anymore. Unlike, for example, the other big topic that's lumped into the social issues bucket, abortion, which still show very strong signs of opposition, even among young conservatives.
No, I think that's right. So whereas since the 70s, you know, since Roe v. Wade, public opinion on abortion has been basically basically fixed. So half the public, you know, and it depends on how you phrase the question, but half the public, you know, supports abortion, right? The other half doesn't. But opinion on gay marriage has not stayed steady in the past 10, 15 years. We've gone from having, we've gone from having most Americans oppose gay marriage to most Americans support gay marriage, supporting gay marriage. I think that in the future, the Republican Party will be, you know, forced and will accept gay marriage, but I think that abortion will continue to be continue to be contentious.
Yeah. And I think what is interesting, one of the kind of explanatory theories for why the pro-life movement is so strong is that Roe v. Wade was a court case that basically legalized all abortion nationwide in one fell swoop. And that's not something that's, and that obviously stoked a massive backlash among people who believed that that was immoral. And gay marriage has proceeded fairly rapidly, but still at different paces in different parts of the country. So it's kind of more that more and more people are slowly becoming acclimatized to it. So you have people in Alabama who see gay marriage being legalized state by state. And it's not this kind of one shock to the system. It's, you know, they're slowly dipping their toes in the pool and realizing that this is going to be the norm in the future and maybe adjusting both their advocacy and their viewpoints on it.
Mm-hmm. See, I might disagree. I might disagree that the way abortion rights came to be, the Supreme Court legalizing abortion in one fell swoop in 1973 is the reason that opposition has been so strong. Because I think that when people, when conservatives, I mean, and you can tell me if this is right or wrong, but I know, I mean, having been a high school conservative and having a lot of conservative family members, you know, when they form opinions about Roe v. Wade, I don't think many people oppose abortion because of the way the Supreme Court instituted abortion rights. I think that people feel naturally, I think abortion is naturally a more complicated issue, you know, and that it has to do with life and, you know, childbirth, family, and, you know, you could say the same thing about gay marriage. You know, that I'm aware that a lot of the opposition on the right to same-sex marriage has to do with deeply ingrained beliefs about, you know, masculinity, femininity, reproduction. But, I mean, the So, I mean, opponents of abortion rights compare abortion to murder. So I, yeah.
Right,
so,
I'm not so passing judgment on that theory, but that is a very popular theory, at least in conservative circles. And I guess in it's almost a unifying trait between conservatives and libertarians, because they like to say that the law was decided incorrectly without passing judgment on the morality of the actual act of abortion.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was a sidestep on the Supreme Court's part, but I think that public opinion, I think, you know, people do make judgments based on the morality of it.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I think that, you know, someone like my mother who's, who opposes abortion, doesn't, you know, and I don't think this is the case for everyone. I think that, you know, the intellectual leaders, people like you in the conservative movement, you know, might have a more nuanced view. You know, think, you know, I think people who think about it more deeply, might form their opinions based on how abortion came to be. But I think for the vast majority of Americans, it's, you know, a gut reaction. They judge it on the merits.
That's certainly likely to be the case. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just don't think that same-sex marriage has, and maybe I'm projecting, but you know, I don't think it has the same resonance with people. I mean, if you think abortion is murder, that's something way more serious than, two guys getting married.
Right. It's also, and this kind of relates to CPAC, what I'll call the Rob Portman effect, which is basically, you know, being homosexual becomes more and more acceptable in society. And, I mean, a lot of the conservative movement says they have nothing against homosexuality itself, it's gay marriage. But it's that knowing someone tends to change your viewpoint on it. And Rob Portman's son came out, or at least Rob Portman announced that his son came out to him earlier at last year's CPAC. And at, in the same time said, you know, this has changed my view on the subject. I am now for the legalization, both in my state and nationwide, of gay marriage. And I think that the kind of relative effect is having more and more of an impact on public opinion as we move forward. Because, you know, I went to a fairly small high school overseas, actually, but there were no out gay people in my high school. And now I know quite a few, both as a result of going to college in America and, just basically knowing more people in a, you know, liberal metropolitan area like Washington, D.C. And not that that had any much impact on my own views, but it does tend to have an impact on people's views who did previously disapprove of gay marriage.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I'm not quite sure why it happens, but you know, studies show that the best predictor of somebody's support for gay rights, for same-sex marriage, is knowing a gay person. Now, I've always thought that's, you know, that, I mean, if you know somebody who's gay, if you're friends with them, it's sort of hard to tell them to their face that, you know, you think that, I mean, their relationship with somebody is wrong. I'm, you know, I think knowing a gay person probably counteracts, challenges stereotypes that people have and that people have about gay people. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way that helps people change, you know, that changes minds. I mean, you'd probably be able to better speak to why it, I've always been curious why it changes people's minds. Is it just that instead of it being an abstract, you know, being opposed to same-sex marriage in the abstract, you know, you have somebody in front of you, you know, and realize what you're saying to them. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider, you know, disapproval of homosexual behavior to be a kind of stigmatization or, you know, otherization, then you can, you know, it's easier to stereotype, a large class of people, none of whom you actually know. And it becomes different when you say, oh, I do know a gay guy. He's my frat brother. He's my friend, you know. And I, you know, like him as a person and support that he wants to have someone that he loves in his life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, it's harder to stigmatize and otherize if, you know someone and you're friends with them. In the same
way.
I
also think it helps to have, you know, to know a gay person and have them not, I like effeminate, you know, effeminate gay guys, you know, I have nothing, I have nothing against them, but, you know, to have somebody, I think it's important to have, I mean, people, for instance, in sports, in the military, now that, gays and lesbians are allowed to serve in the military, I think it's important to see people like you, people like yourself, and people that you can relate to, who are gay,
right.
Because then, you know, it helps to see yourself in their shoes, which I think, maybe I'm answering my own question, but, you know, I think the ability to see yourself in the gay person's shoes, you know, is probably what leads people to change their opinion on same-sex marriage once they know somebody. So I'm curious, not to take the reins from the discussion, not to take the reins from you on the discussion, but I've been reading about, there was this big, back and forth between, Bill Salatin at Slate, Mark Stern at Slate, Connor Friedersdorf, and Ross Douthat at, you know, his original piece that you mentioned at the time saying, that conservatives are going to have to negotiate the terms of their surrender on same-sex marriage, about whether the refusal. So the big question now legally, now that it looks that, it looks like same-sex marriage is going to be the law of the land, and probably sooner than, the 2020s, is to what extent conservatives should be, or religious conservatives should be exempted, have protections from, and the quintessential example is the wedding vendor example, where you have somebody who runs a photography business and doesn't want to photograph a same-sex wedding, a baker who, because of his beliefs, doesn't want to bake a cake for a same-sex wedding. Under current law, in states that have gay marriage, like New York or, I mean, Washington, D.C. Isn't a state, but it has these same laws. There is no exemption for for-profit businesses to deny somebody services based on their religious beliefs. It's the question also that the Supreme Court is considering in the challenge to Obamacare's contraception mandate. So, I mean, all that background to say, the discussion has been on the internet the past, you know, week over whether it's, you know, whether there can be opposition to same-sex marriage that doesn't stem from bigotry.
Right.
So, I mean, I assume that you would say yes.
I don't know. I'm not the arbiter of what is bigotry. And I know part of the problem is that people recoil when you call them bigots. And that's kind of, I think, what Douthat's column got to the heart of, which is that you want to, the pro-gay marriage emerging majority, he says, should basically accept the terms of the surrender with magnanimity. Kind of say, you know, basically say no hard feelings. We respect your religious beliefs, and we don't think that that is this word that is very, that carries a lot of stigma with it, bigotry, right? I don't know what is bigotry. But I do think, like, it's hard to find a certain point where it's not bigotry, it's just being a jerk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's being a jerk to a wide swath of people, And maybe it just means that bigots or people who oppose gay marriage or whatever just have to lie in the future. So if you're a florist or a baker, you say, no, I can't, do the flowers for your wedding. I'm booked that day because you oppose gay marriage. Rather than saying because it's for gay marriage, I'm not going to do it. Just say, oh no, I'm not available. And yes, we have a very broad swath of legal history saying that certain characteristics make you a legally protected class of citizens, and you can still sue someone who conveniently is busy every day of a gay marriage that someone brings to them. But it seems like it's just kind of basically trying to shame people into admitting they were wrong and having to celebrate things. And I spoke with, actually, on Blogging Heads last week, Jason Kuznicki of the Cato Institute, who argued that the amount of legal discrimination against gay people by the government was not enough to elevate sexuality to a legally protected class, which would still grant, religious bakers the ability to deny based on sexual preferences. And basically that is the law right now. And the question is if that's going to be the law in the future.
What is the law right now?
I just wanted to make sure I understood. Sexuality is not a legally protected class of citizens.
No, so it's sort of, it's open. So the courts are still deciding whether gays and lesbians count as what's called a suspect classification, right. Whether because of a history of discrimination, they're entitled to, protection from the government. And basically the difference is when you have, so if the government, if the courts decide that gays do constitute a suspect class, then laws that affect them are held to a higher standard, than other laws. There needs to be a compelling state interest for passing a law that discriminates against gay people. Courts are still debating the, you have different rulings from different judges around the country, some saying that gays count as a suspect class, others saying that, more often than judges saying that gays don't count as a suspect class, they'll say that even on, a lower standard, even on a rational basis standard, laws targeting gays are unconstitutional. I think you're totally right that people recoil when they're called bigots. I'm really not optimistic about same-sex marriage supporters being magnanimous in victory, because I think that's not, first of all, that's not those aren't the terms on which the gay marriage battle has been waged. So, for the last 20 years, opposition from the right to same-sex marriage has been fierce. Gays have been compared to pedophiles. The campaign from organizations like the National Organization for Marriage has not been nice. Right. I think that politics isn't nice, and so I think it's unrealistic to think that the gay rights movement is not going to try to stamp out and make, to use Ross Douthat's words, to make traditionalism when it comes to same-sex marriage radioactive. I think that was the plan from the beginning. and Yeah, I don't think it's going to be pretty for social conservatives, and that's not. Yeah, I think that's a description of reality.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, I have no clue how the future will play out, but that's probably the case, and that's probably why we're seeing these kinds of pieces being written now, because it does increasingly look like sooner rather than later it's going to be the law of the land, and you know, the terms, the basically being against, say, if you're someone who says, you know, clearly it's legal for interracial marriage to occur, but I still personally oppose it, is an opinion that will get you shamed out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Now. And I think that religious conservatives who want to say that religion has always been the thing that informs my opposition to same-sex marriage, they don't want that to be the case in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so do you mean that people want...
religious conservatives don't want either their previously held beliefs on same-sex marriage or their continuing opposition, moral opposition to same-sex marriage in the face of legal acceptance. They don't want that to be shamed out of the room.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so with laws like the one you saw in Arizona and Kansas, which neither state has same-sex marriage or non-discrimination protections on the books. So in Arizona, you can fire somebody for being gay, which most people don't realize that's allowed anyway.
Right. Yeah.
But so conservative states now, realizing that the same-sex marriage battle is over, are trying to pass preemptive laws, so ensuring that the conscience of religious conservatives will be protected once gay marriage becomes law of the land. And, you know, on my side of the debate, there's been an attempt to cast those attempts as entirely motivated by prejudice, bigotry. I mean, it's actually remarkable to watch the outcry from the gay rights community and even moderate Republicans, mm-hmm. you know, at the tail end when Arizona tried to pass a law.
Yeah, both legalizing. John McCain and Jeff Flake encouraged Jan Brewer to veto it.
Yeah, which I found really remarkable. Despite the talking point from my side that, you know, all of this is motivated by bigotry, I think a lot of it is. I think a lot of opposition to homosexuality is motivated by, unexamined, by stereotypes, by, unexamined prejudices, but not entirely. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's fair to say, and it's understandable to see why, conservatives, people like my parents, traditionalists, I think it's understandable to see that why they're scared. In the past 15 years, you've had something, an assumption about family, an assumption about society, you know, that marriage is between a man and a woman. People are suddenly being told that will be viewed as the equivalent of racism in the future. The speed with which the gay rights movement has won the gay marriage or is winning the gay marriage fight, I think, is surprising. And I think it's scary to people who are afraid that they're going to be marginalized and that their views are going to be marginalized in the future. Right now, we have all of these court cases trying to determine. In the Hobby Lobby case, which is the challenge to the contraception mandate in the Affordable Care Act, and all these other legal cases, we have the courts deciding whether and to what extent businesses can refuse service to gays and lesbians. Where people of religious conscience, what they're allowed to do or how they're allowed to express their opposition to homosexuality in the public sphere. But I mean, more important than that, I think, is the social policing that goes on. So whether or not, whatever the courts decide, it will not be socially acceptable in the future for a business not to allow gays and lesbians.
Right.
And I mean, you've seen, you know, when a business refuses to serve gays and lesbians, you see like the avalanche of media, of media coverage of it. The gay blogs all, you know, hop on and,
yeah,
you know, call for boycotts, call for, letter writing campaigns. I mean, the social stigma, I think, you know, social mores, will be as powerful an enforcer of gay rights as the courts.
Right. And I thought it was interesting, in the kind of lead up to Jan Brewer's veto, there were a bunch of kind of mega corporations, urging the veto to go through and kind of, voicing their non-discrimination policy and their support for gay rights. So it does seem like, the florist, the baker cases are some of the best examples for anti-same-sex marriage conservatives, mm-hmm. because they're small businesses who are being sued, who don't want to supply their services based on, let's say, a genuine religious objection to solely gay marriage, not homosexual activity or behavior. And I think that the example of the larger corporations publicly voicing their opposition is an example of where public opinion is on this issue. That it's not just that, it's not that, it's that the companies basically weren't taking any risks by doing mm-hmm. that. And that they were definitely benefiting publicly from that.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the case of the florist, of the baker is much more, the position of social conservatives in a much more favorable light.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the public is less likely to sympathize with Walmart wanting to turn away, you know, gay and lesbian customers than they are with, you know, somebody who runs their own photography business and they personally have, they personally don't support same-sex marriage and don't right. want to, even peripherally by taking pictures, be involved in the ceremony.
Right.
But I actually think that, I think it's important to abstract away from the, from the particulars, from the concrete example, the underlying principle to both the argument that the florist shouldn't be required to provide flowers, or in the case of the Hobby Lobby case, is that for-profit corporations should be allowed to refuse services to people based on religious belief. In practice, with the florist, you know, the religious belief is same-sex marriage, but is opposition to same-sex marriage. But in the you heard the argument for maintaining racial segregation was identical. The churches churches in the South wanted to maintain Jim Crow, wanted to maintain segregation on the basis that the Bible supported separation of the races. I think it's important to look at the broader principle that we're talking about when we're talking about these florists. You know, should a for-profit corporation be allowed to refuse services to somebody based on religious belief? And if it you know, when you provide a concrete example to show what you mean, in the case of the florist, people are much more sympathetic to that. They're less sympathetic to, so polling shows that, you know, in the Hobby Lobby case, there is a corporation, Hobby Lobby, that doesn't want to provide contraception coverage to its as part of its insurance package, as required by the Affordable Care Act. People aren't people are way more sympathetic to that argument than they are to refusing services to gay people. Mm-hmm. Although, as you pointed out, you know, it's when you're there's a difference between small businesses and large corporations, mm-hmm. which. I mean, when you're doing business in public, you know, being a company of one person, 10 people is, you know, on paper, you're still whatever LLC, you know, you're still
or an
you know, some form of a corporation.
Yeah.
But I think that the window during which people, the public is sympathetic to the florist or the baker is closing, I think that in the future people will see that as equivalent to a florist or a baker refusing to provide services at an interracial wedding. You know, which I think that if you ask most people, should people be allowed to, you know, should a florist be allowed to do that? Most would say no. Mm-hmm. And I think the window during which they're, you know, there's a difference between those two, and people don't see anti-gay discrimination as equivalent to racial discrimination. It's closing. I think in the future, those will be seen as equivalent, which I think is scary to, you know, to social conservatives.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if you agree with the assessment.
I'm not sure. I think that religion really does still have a special place in Americans' hearts, even when those Americans don't subscribe to the particulars of that potential religious belief, right? And this is just more by general polling than specific polling, but I would suspect that an Episcopalian and the Episcopalian Church generally approves of same-sex marriage would still be more sympathetic to the rights of an evangelical business owner to turn down service to a same-sex marriage ceremony than, you know, an atheist would. So mm-hmm. I think that because religion is still so prevalent in American society, and it does still bring a lot of people together, even when their faiths disagree on a lot of things, that I'm not sure that you said the window is closing, and I'm not sure that that's the case. And I think
you
that's
right.
why I think that's why a lot of religious conservatives consider some of these cases to be so important, is that they might set the terms, of the social conservative surrender, that gay marriage will be legal and accepted and generally celebrated by most of America, but we will still have these generally applicable religious exemptions and this kind of legal carve out for religious conscience rights. And I think that what they see is that would carve out protections for religion in the future on issues that might not be about gay marriage, that might be about providing contraception as a business owner, or, you know, I can't predict what else might come, but kind of this idea that, and I think that a lot of religious conservatives are scared of this, is that some modern progressives see religion as practiced by a lot of America as fundamentally incompatible with modern society, and that it is important to to some extent stamp it out. And I think exactly. And I think that might be an over-exaggeration on the part of conservatives who want to protect that. But I do think that it is a genuine, even if small, impulse in the progressive movement, and I think that conservatives worry that it will become a larger impulse.
No, I think you're right. I think that the, I mean, there will obviously be progressives who want to stamp religion out of American life. You know, I'm not one of them, and I don't think that the movement as a whole is seeking to do that, but I do think the progressive
movement, I
think
it's pretty firmly on the fringes, considering the role of faith in Barack Obama's life.
Yes. Which, I mean, I never really, you know, I don't actually believe that Barack Obama is that religious. I think it's a show.
Okay.
I tend to be cynical about that stuff. But I do think that progressives are, that they want a more secular society. And they see that a society in which, they believe, and I do think that the belief, you know, when progressives express a belief in pluralism and say that they want to make room for religious people, I think that that's sincere. I think that progressives do want a country in which a conservative Christian can worship and, you know, live life according to, according to their beliefs. I do think that they want a country where there's room for people of all faiths to, to live their lives and practice their faith freely. But I think that they do want to secularize the public sphere. At least that's my perspective. And sort of make the public sphere neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, it's sort of a silly example, but you can sort of see it in the war on Christmas stuff.
Right. That I actually had this argument with a few of my friends who were both liberals a while ago. You know, one of them brought up, it was during Christmas season, one of them brought up, you know, Fox News's war on Christmas is, all made up and horrible and fake. And my other friend agreed with him. And I said, well, look, knowing that one of them was a fairly aggressive secularist, I said, well, would you be in favor of, you know, the government changing the name of Christmas to, Fun Winter Holiday? And he said, yes. And at that point, he lost my other liberal friend, who said, that's a ridiculous thing to say. You know, we do still, like, there are still genuine religious beliefs that have a place in the public sphere, like having a public holiday based around one religion's celebration.
Yeah, I think that I'd be with your fun winter holiday friend.
I mean, that is, I think, something that that religious conservatives are scared of, is that kind of stamping out of religion from public life.
Yeah. See, I think that I'd be okay with also having, I mean, as long as it's all-inclusive, so you have, symbols from other, minority faiths on display, I think, that I'm comfortable when I see that, when I see a menorah and a Christmas tree and, I guess, what are the symbols for, I'm trying to think of something, Muslim related that you could also put on display, but, I'm comfortable with, ecumenical displays, mm-hmm. public displays of religion. I think that what makes liberals uncomfortable is sending the message that we are a Christian nation. Even if in fact a large majority of Americans identify as Christian, I think that liberals want to to make the public sphere a place where everyone feels represented and included. It can be difficult to represent everyone's views in the public sphere. The drive to like not be offensive and to be inclusive can get extreme. So I'm not necessarily opposed to religion in the public sphere, period. I just want it to be ecumenical. I want everyone to feel like they're included.
Right. All right. Well, that is probably about enough time for today. Thanks a lot for coming on with me, Gabriel. And I will see everyone else next time on Blogging Heads.
All right. Thanks a lot for inviting me.